Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The worst crimes are those committed against children, the most vulnerable members of our society. So if the abuser is meant to be caring for the child, it is an unimaginable breach of trust. In 2017, unexplained injuries began appearing on a toddler's body. Her guardian searched desperately for an answer, unaware that the perpetrator was hiding in plain sight. This is what happens when a babysitter becomes a killer. This is the murder of Lily Hanrahan. I'm Emma Kenny, welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Today's case is one that is going to infuriate you, it infuriated me. In fact, it makes me go to quite a dark place in my mind when I think about the repercussions I believe the perpetrator should have to endure, I don't know, for eternity. So let's go back to 2016. Lily Hanrahan is born, and this is on the 21st of February 2016. Her life was tough from the get-go. We always want our innocence, our most vulnerable in our society, to have a good life. We want them to be loved, cherished, adored, basically, and certainly above everything, we want them to be kept safe. But for Lily Hanrahan, it was difficult because her father was a drug dependent and her mother was also a heroin addict who had struggled with depression literally for a decade. So we have two individuals who are not going to be adequate when it comes to providing a stable environment for their child. And whilst we can have a level of empathy and sympathy for individuals who find themselves dependent where drugs are concerned, it also shows a failure in willingness to prioritise a child. And whilst that might sound quite hard line, it comes from a place of believing that if you do have a baby, then really your needs are secondary from that point. And if you're an individual who chooses not to prioritise your baby, then you certainly are not in the position where you should be a parent. So her mum in particular suffered with drug addiction before and during pregnancy. And that meant that the pregnancy had some issues and Lily was born prematurely. She was really ill after she'd been born. She actually stayed in hospital for 3 weeks. And you can imagine if somebody has got an opiate dependency and is pregnant, the withdrawal for that child is going to be pretty horrendous to go through. And when you imagine a baby being born, it's usually a celebration and certainly something, even when it involves, shall we say, problems. My own little boy was a preterm child. It brings a lot of worry and concern, but what you are pouring into that child every single day is just love and the art of caring and healing that you provide them as a parent. Clearly for Lily, that wasn't the case. After she gets discharged, you won't be surprised to know that her parents were completely incapable of providing any adequate care for her because of the circumstances that they were involved in. So a relative, 28-year-old Helen Corlett, ultimately takes legal guardianship of Lily in July 2016. Now, this is when Lily was just 5 months of age. And the reason that she's not gone earlier to this particular relative is because Lily's maternal grandmother, Leslie, had been taking really good care of her. But the thing is, for Leslie, she's also got custody of her daughter's 2 older sons. And the truth is, she's getting older. She has a huge amount of responsibility already because of the problematic behaviour of her daughter. Consequently, she feels that she can't manage looking after Lily too. And evidently, we would all sympathise and empathise with that reality. And I have a respect level for somebody who realises they have limitations and they just can't provide the adequate care that Lily's going to require. So Helen becomes Lily's special guardian. Now, this woman, she already has 3 daughters of her own. They're aged 4, 8 and 10. And she opens her home to Lily and she opens her heart to Lily. And genuinely, Lily becomes the sibling's little sister and is treated as you would hope and wish for her to be treated as a really important member of their family. So she goes to that family on the 7th of July 2016. Now, Helen must have been really busy. For any of you out there who've got a few kids, it's busy running a household per se, but when you bring in another child and you have three young children already, meaning you now have four young children to look after, you're going to be stretched time-wise, but she never complained about this. She genuinely embraced it, full stop. She was also taking a university course and studying, so she was really thinking about her future and upping her skills and moving forward. And people said that this particular individual was just an absolute loving, devoted mother to her four girls. And indeed, that's a really important point to note, that she considered now that she had four children, not three. Now in 2017, Helen and her children are living at The Green in Northfield in Birmingham. Now 21-month-old Lily at this point has proven to be an absolutely joyous addition to the family. People describe her as a really cheeky, happy, healthy little girl. Now, according to her family, don't get me wrong, she could also be quite shy and cautious around new people, but that's good because with secure attachment, which is what we want to aim for where children are concerned, you want a child to not automatically trust the world around them. You want a child to feel that you're the secure base, and when you're present, understandably, they feel safe enough to explore the world. But if you're not present and strangers are there, it can be quite intimidating. It takes them time to warm towards that individual. It's a very protective mechanism that fortunately, through positive attachment and secure attachment, children form. So that cautiousness around new people is actually an essential ingredient, and it shows that Lily is doing well. And it's noted that even though she would be shy and a little bit avoidant initially, as soon as she realised that they were a safe person, she'd be dancing around with her arms in the air, just trying to have as much fun as possible. So again, we're just seeing that secure attachment playing out. Grandmother also said that one of the things about Lily was that she was just naturally one of those kids that loved to dance. She had a really upbeat kind of personality. Lily was attending Fig Tree Nursery at this point, and again, it's mirrored by the staff that they had this joyful little bundle of a girl. She was really happy. They said that she was very well cared for. And also importantly, she's meeting all her milestones. Now, if you think about milestones, the reality is that when you're a preterm child, that can be a little bit more problematic because developmentally, you've had a bit of a shock to the system when you're born early. Add to that potentially withdrawal impact from the scenario of a mother taking opioids. We would expect potentially that there could be some developmental delay, even if that's only temporary, but it's not the case. She's thriving in her environment. And I mean absolutely 100% thriving. She's had this awful start, and yet here we are in a point and position where Lily is doing so well. And everyone who knows her is reflecting that reality. And that's what's going to make the case today even more devastating to cover, really. So we get to the spring of 2017. Helen's been single at this point, and understandably, like a lot of us, life can get lonely. You're hoping to meet a partner who's going to be able to bring an additional joy to your life and activity to your life and just to be able to socialise with and so on and so forth. And she ends up beginning this relationship with a guy called Sean Sadler. He's 29 years old when they get together. He's from Rubery in Birmingham, and they've actually got a bit of a history. So they'd previously been in a relationship with one another, but it hadn't worked out. And he was actually the father of her eldest child. Now, I am one of those people. Maybe it's just my suspicious nature or the way that I kind of err on the side of caution in certain circumstances. But I think it's really rare that relationships that have previously failed can work at another time. It does happen. Don't throw anything at your screen. I appreciate it does happen. But statistically, it's less likely to succeed because unless you've changed all of the things that were problematic in the very first place, an instance, then logistically, you're still the same person and they're going to annoy you at some point because they are the person that you didn't want in your life back then. But they get back together And obviously they have this history because of the child. And clearly when you have a kid with somebody, there is certainly a bridge that you wish you could walk, that you could meet in the middle so that you can move forward in the best interests of your children. And in this case, it could be that that's a real motivating factor, that he has essentially been in her life as a parent to one of her children. And it's nice feeling that you can create that family unit. In fact, that can make people have a huge psychological bias to believing that it's worth giving it a shot, even when their instinct potentially tells them that it's a no-go. Now, their initial relationship, so when she was pregnant with her eldest child, they separated during that pregnancy. And to some degree, you could say, oh, well, that's okay, as long as he's been very solidly in the life of the eldest child, because obviously you want that person to show a level of accountability and responsibility. But he hadn't actually ever been involved in the child's life. And again, it sounds judgmental, but if you are a father of a child and you actively choose not to be involved with that child's life in any way, shape or form, you're already deadbeat as far as I am concerned. But Helen, and bear in mind, this is a woman who opens her home to a child that she hasn't born and who creates an environment that is wonderful for that child to the degree where they thrive. I can imagine that she has a very forgiving nature. So when he comes back, probably full of excuses, probably saying every single thing that she would wish to hear, that this man is reformed, changed, wants to be involved, has made mistakes, you can imagine that she's more likely to give them a compassionate stance in that belief system and to forgive them ultimately. So she decides that she'll give it another go with him. So now he starts visiting regularly. And again, if he has been absent and now is saying, I want a relationship with you, and is returning regularly to spend time with you, that's going to bolster that belief that this individual is now a decent human being. He's older, got his life together, really wants to make a go of this. So that's going to work in his favour. And it would work in anybody's favour, because that's how relationships should be. But we also have to imagine that this man is potentially a high-level manipulator, and he knows how to bond quickly in a relationship. And that constant familiarity and engagement, that helps you to get your feet under the door. It really does. It's a way of ensuring that you can essentially be seen as a member of the family more quickly than you probably deserve to be. So he's visiting all the time, staying overnight, and in fact, in the end, he's pretty much living there. He's spending most of his time there. So he has access to the children, and obviously, on one level, that could be a very good thing, but it can also turn out to be a really, really negative thing. Because on the surface, Sadler seems like a really decent guy. He has nailed down that mask of acceptability, responsibility, and obviously is emitting this characteristic that people basically trust. Also, some of the things that he'd done in the past, again, adds to that reputation. So he'd previously raised money at charity events. One of them had actually been to raise money for Birmingham Children's Hospital. So when he did that, he took part in white collar boxing in 2016. And the promotional poster featured Sean the Student Sadler and a picture of him. I'm not sure I'd have gone for a name like Sean the Student Sadler. Doesn't sound contextual with boxing. I'm splitting hairs. Maybe the person creating that name wasn't very inventive. But basically, that's what they've got him on the poster. There's a picture of him there. And to be fair, Sadler was also known on the white collar fighting circuit. There are actually some videos.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Of his matches online. And the general consensus, from what I can understand, is that as a fighter, he was very enthusiastic but lacked technical ability. It's just a nice way of saying he was crap at it. basically. Definitely stick to the white collar, ideally fighting the 17-year-old photocopier lad as opposed to grown-ups who could kick his ass. I sound bitter, don't I? I think you'll all agree that it's an acceptable stance to take when I talk about the rest of this story. And also, I imagine that many of you would like to get into a ring with this particular individual once you know what this story is going to entail. In fact, I would, and I have no technical ability. But then, I'm pretty good at concealing things. Just throwing it out there. Maybe the odd taser, cattle prod, something like that. I digress. So from August 2017, at this point, obviously Helen's in a relationship with him, she trusts him. So she starts entrusting him to look after Lily on his own. This is when she's either at uni or she's busy taking her older children to activities like dance lessons. And bear in mind at this point, the only reason Helen is leaving Lily in his care is because she thinks he is a pair of safe hands. But really sadly for her, she's unaware of this horrific excuse for a human's past. Because Sadler was far from the caring, charitable guy that he purports to be. In fact, in truth, this beast had a uncontrollable, volatile temper, a really violent history. And he had a particular penchant for targeting individuals who he saw as vulnerable, because that's what bullies do. They look for individuals with chinks in their armour and then they exploit them. He was a bully, and also he was a serial abuser of women. And his criminal record was really considerable. So we go back to April 2012. He assaults an ex-partner on two occasions in her own home. First of all, he grabbed her by her face, pushed her backwards before pushing her to the floor, and then he punches her in the chest four or five times. So really high level violence. Next day, he goes back to her flat, to get into an argument again. He pushes her to the floor, kicks her, and punches her in the ribs. Bear in mind, this guy likes white collar boxing, so clearly he might be useless against men. But when it comes down to physicality in relation to women, he's going to be able to cause some serious damage. And also, he's kicking her in the ribs, punching her in the ribs. We know how painful that is. My God, if any of you ever chipped a rib or broke a rib, it's agony. But it also says something about a lack of boundaries. He really doesn't care about the damage that he's doing to her. He also then goes on to hit her on the body with a dog chain. So that's high level violence. You don't know the damage that you can do. Bear in mind, when you're punching or kicking somebody in the ribs, you can puncture their lungs. It is very dangerous. And the fact he's doing this to a woman who is clearly going to be physically weaker than him, it demonstrates the bullying, but it also demonstrates the power dynamic. This is the man who likes to dominate. And also, we've seen him kicking and punching her, pushing her to the ground, but then he's getting a dog chain. So he's had a thought about that. He's considered his options. How else can I hurt her? And he's then actually gone and fetched that chain. So that demonstrates the power that he enjoys wielding over another human being. Now, because of that, he gets convicted of two counts of battery. Is that enough? I don't think so, with respect. I think that's grievous bodily harm, but who am I to say this? Then we get to 2014, and this just sparks so many red flags as far as I'm concerned in this behaviour. I mean, what we've just talked about is horrific. But in 2014, he punches a woman in the face outside a social club without warning. No prelude to it, no argument, no escalation in conflict. Not that any of that would validate a man punching a woman square on in the face. This comes totally out of the blue. Now, one could say, well, that shows low impulse control. What's going on there in his brain? This is an individual who can't contain or control himself. No, that's not the case. Because what we've seen in prior attacks is that this man knows exactly what he's doing and why he's doing it. He likes the reaction. He likes the pain he causes. This is somebody who can do white collar boxing. He knows how to control himself. There are rules and regulations. This is more about him probably, yes, being under the influence and just thinking, I'm going to do something that I enjoy doing. There is nothing more terrifying, confusing, or scary than a grown man punching you in the face without warning. and she actually required hospital treatment. Again, he gets convicted of battery. I don't think that's very strong when you think about the circumstances we just talked about. And then we get to 2017 when he's convicted of battery again. This is after another assault towards an ex-partner in March. They'd been having an argument about contact with their child. Now, he forcibly held her arm, grabbed her mobile phone from her hand and threw it across the room. When she finally calls the police, she calls them because Sadler begins smashing up a house. And all of this is leading us to a full understanding that this man is a menace to women and certainly a danger to be around them. Now, at the time that Sadler actually rekindles the relationship with Helen, he is still the subject of a restraining order as a result of that offence that I've just described. Also, he's having to attend domestic abuse perpetrators group work programme. It's called Building Better Relationships. And I will tell you now that there is mixed evidence about those domestic abuse perpetrators group work programmes. In fact, some of the evidence suggests that they create poorer outcomes for the perpetrators than if the perpetrator hadn't actually attended. So it's not necessarily going to be in his favour attending those when you look at the results that come out on this particular type of group work. But nonetheless, this is something that Helen is completely unaware of. Bear in mind as well that Sadler, because he's on probation, he had actually had to inform probation services that he was in a new relationship. He's required to do that because he's got this history of violence against other partners and ex-partners. So he discloses to the probation, look, I've met somebody new. Also discloses that Helen's got several young children. Now, at this point, there is a very clear process. Probation are aware that Helen is in a relationship with a violent offender. This man has a history of being violent in intimate relationships. They need to work, ideally with social services, to make sure that he is not acting in a way that could provide a problematic experience for the children or for Helen. At least they need to inform Helen so that she can make an informed choice as to whether he should be around her at all. Now, had the correct procedures been followed, Helen would have been made aware of Sadler's criminal past, but she wasn't. So she has literally no idea. And when you look at Sadler's offending behaviour, it's pretty terrifying. He'd started offending when he was still at school. So he'd assaulted classmates on occasion, he'd assaulted family members, and he'd also violently assaulted members of the public. So that in itself means that there is no change in his behaviour. We're looking at a full adult now, but this behaviour starts very early on, and if anything, is escalatory in nature. His violence isn't going anywhere. In fact, what we're seeing is an amplification of this behaviour. And unless something enormous shifts and changes, why and how will he actually adapt to a more pro-social type of behaviour per se? Now, on top of this, he also has a history of mental health problems. So he'd previously been referred to ADHD services, but he hadn't actually received any treatment for it because there was a waiting list. I find it absolutely bizarre that individuals that need support, and even though I have no sympathy and empathy for this man at all, certainly if there were issues in his teenagehood and he's being diagnosed with ADHD and he's going to be getting some help to manage some of his behaviours and then he just gets referred but no treatment ever comes, it's paying lip service. Oh, we're going to refer you for treatment. We're not actually going to act on any of that treatment and you're not going to get any of the help that we know you need. Now, as I always say on this channel, ADHD does not make you a horrific child abuser at all. But it's just worth noting that it's going to be an additional problem that this individual incurs during his life. Now, by September of that year, so this is literally just a month after Sadler begins looking after Lily, Helen begins to notice bruising on the little girl. Now, it's absolutely 100% common for toddlers to have knocks and falls whilst learning to walk, without a shadow of a doubt. I was black and blue my entire childhood. In fact, my mum was questioned at the hospital because I was constantly there. You know, you can tell a kid not to climb a tree, but you can't watch that kid near a tree 24/7. And also, when you're a kid who falls out of a tree and realises that you survive, don't put you off climbing the tree. Just throwing it out. Sorry, Mum, by the way. I'm sure it was a bit embarrassing being questioned. But it's the same with my kids. They were black and blue all the time. They were riding the bikes and falling off. They were on roller skates from a really young age. And they too were climbing trees. So you get used to a certain amount of black and blue bruises on their legs and arms. But what really concerns Helen is that some of the bruises that she's starting to notice, they don't look like ordinary bruises, those childhood experience bruises we expect. They look as if somebody's actually gripped Lily, so a level of force has been exerted on this little girl. Initially, she thinks, well, you know what, maybe they've been caused at playgroup, but she also starts to have this concern, and she thinks to herself, you know what, I'm leaving Sadler with this little girl. Could it be that Sadler's the one causing these bruises? On one level, I would say that denotes a really perceptive individual caring for a child. But on another, there's a sneaky bit of me that thinks that maybe she had some concerns about Sadler. Maybe some of his behaviours weren't conducive to what she believed they should be around a child. And even though he's not doing anything outlandish, I think that she has a sixth sense. But like so many of us, we just kind of subdue that, put it to the back of our mind, sink it down in the pit of our stomach, because we don't want to believe it's possible. And one of the things that he does when she starts to kind of talk about the fact that she's concerned about these bruises is that he plays the doting carer. You know, he's really concerned about these bruises and he even says, look, you know what we need to do? We need to document them. So why don't we both take photos? We'll look at the unexplained bruises. We'll get this collection of photographs. And that way we can take a note of when this is happening and try to clarify if this is something we should be worried about. Is it happening at nursery, for example? Or are we missing something where she's concerned? Because clearly health concerns can create bruises and you need to be aware of them and forming so you can have a conversation with your healthcare provider about them. Anemia, for example, there are a whole host of issues with children, things like leukemia, they cause bruising. And actually it's one of the first indicators there's an issue going on within the child. So it makes sense to document them. But Helen, she'll be thinking, oh, well, he seems really concerned and he's even suggesting that we should take notes. Why would he be the person doing it if he's not dismissing it and he's taking it seriously? So we can see the high level of manipulation there. He could lean away from the bruises and say, I don't know what you're on about. It's nothing to do with me. This is just what happens in childhood, and kind of reject, deny, avoid. But instead he leans in, and that's clever, because when somebody is thinking potentially you're the individual responsible, by leaning in and saying, well, we need to take this really seriously, it reduces the level of incrimination that they will have towards you. So these notes are taken and these photographs are taken. This includes on the 30th of September and the 28th of October, there are injuries to Lily's ears. Very concerning. Big red flag. Just for those of you who don't know, within child protection, the ears are not where we expect to see injuries at all. 19th of September, 2nd October, and the 17th of November, gripping or bruising marks on Lily's thighs. Second, big red flag. Fingertip bruising on thighs, for example, are not marks that should be present. If you think about, even if you're an individual who chastises your child using physical force, I massively disagree with it. All the evidence says that if you hit a child, their behaviour will be worse than a child who isn't hit. So it actually is very counterproductive. But even if you are somebody who believes that you should be allowed to smack your child, you are not going to smack them in a way that creates fingertip bruising, gripping bruising to the thighs. It's the area that suggests that somebody is potentially gripping them and lifting them up, for example. That's not what we should see. Then we have 28th of October and the 17th of November, bruising on Lily's scalp. Now, a scalp is different to a forehead. And again, it's unusual to see bruising on a scalp. Forehead happens all the time. Even as an adult, I occasionally have bruising to my own head because I walk into things quite a lot. I'm quite a distracted person. And when you're a kid, oh my goodness, how many of us have seen pictures of ourselves as children with big egg-shaped marks on our head where we've banged into something and we've got a great shiner coming up there? That's normal to some degree, but not on the scalp. So these are really problematic bruising areas and they keep appearing. And Helen is so concerned about this and also so open about the fact she's got nothing to hide whatsoever. She's genuinely concerned about how this child is ending up with these bruises. So she goes and speaks to the nursery, Fig Tree Nursery, where she attends, and she speaks to them in October 2017. And together, they actually come up with a plan and they decide to keep a body map of Lily's injuries. And this is so they can monitor her. Now, I've worked in safeguarding for a lot of my career, and a body map is absolutely essential. It's a part of a welfare toolkit. And what we do with these is we record physical injuries suffered by the child. It gives us a record. It means that there's a historic piece of evidence. And on top of that, it ensures that we are all on board, that we have some concerns about the safeguarding of this child. And Helen is that worried that she even goes to her GP, and she actually asked the GP to check out the injuries. And the doctor's concerned enough to actually test for a blood disorder because they're thinking, yeah, there are quite a few unexplained injuries there. But I feel that there is a failure at this point, because if you bring a child into me as a GP and I see bruising that's fingertip orientated, that is what I would consider red flag orientated, my job is to raise a safeguarding concern. That safeguarding concern will be to social services. I will note that I have concerns about potential abuse, and I may be wrong, and that's okay, because social services will be able to check the child out and ensure that the child is in a safe place, look at what's going on in the home, maybe ask about the individuals who have access to this child. And bear in mind, we've already got one systemic failure. We have probation not informing Helen that she's with an absolute monster of a predator with a horrendous history. So if social services had been passed a safeguarding concern about this bruising, visited mum, asked questions about who has access to the children, then the likelihood is they would have found out about the fact that this man is actually staying with this child by herself. And that may well have meant that they had returned and said, look, Helen, you need to make sure this man is nowhere near your children. But for the doctor, just to try to be balanced, he's seeing this incredibly concerned mother, even though she's not biologically a mother, she's absolutely a mother in every other way for this child. So the likelihood is he's thinking, well, she seems really, really concerned. It doesn't feel like this would be the individual abusing the child. She's looking at every possible avenue to explain and explore these particular issues, and that could have reduced their concern about the danger that Lily was in. But it's a failure. They should have absolutely wanted to get to the bottom of what was happening to Lily. And for Helen, who's doing all of this amazing detective work, desperately trying to ensure that Lily is in safe hands and is getting the best care possible, she doesn't realise that the culprit, the predator, the monster who is committing these acts is literally hiding in plain sight. She's inviting him into her home. She's providing him, unknowingly, with access to the person that he wants to abuse most in the world. Now, these bruises don't stop. And in fact, as time progresses, more and more mysterious bruises appear on Lily. And Helen's now starting to realise, listen, the one commonality that I feel exists here is that they seem to happen when Sadler's around. It seems to be a little bit too coincidental that this man is spending time with my little girl and she's getting more and more bruises. Now, of course, what's he doing when she's kind of talking about her fears and concerns? He's saying, I've got no idea where these are coming from. No knowledge whatsoever. But it's enough for her to think, I don't feel safe leaving Lily alone with him. She felt that Lily was not at an age where she could verbally communicate. You know, she was saying words, but only like mummy, or she'd use her sister's names, but she wasn't able to say, please don't leave me with this absolute predatory bastard, which is what we all wish children could say, even though it would be very strange watching a child use the term bastard. You know where I'm going with this. The point is, she can't developmentally do that. She can't protect herself. She can't do it physically. She can't do it emotionally. She can't do it verbally. But she can do it to some degree with her actions. So it becomes very evident that she's afraid of Sadler. So if he walks in the room, she literally runs to Helen. Also, she starts getting really clingy and she cries when Helen leaves her. Now, when that happens, we're dealing with an anxious attachment, essentially. We're dealing with a situation where there is a level of anxiety within the experience. It's a more insecure attachment. We've gone from a really secure attachment where Helen was creating this scenario and environment where this little girl is thriving, and now we've got a more insecure, anxious attachment. Maybe anxious avoidant it would come under, because she wants to avoid Sadler and she wants to be present with her mother, which is why she's clinging on so deeply and so dearly, really, for life, because she wants to be in the safe place and safe space, and Helen represents that. So he's walking in and she's given these very physical signs that validate some of Helen's fears. And Helen's clearly verbal about that. And she says, you know, I'm really concerned about the way Lily's being towards you. And she says that to Sadler in some WhatsApp messages. But all he does is say, listen, I've got no idea what's going on here. I've never harmed Lily. At the end of the day, I'm a trusted partner. You have nothing to worry about. Please understand that I am not the problem here. And again, she hasn't physically seen him be aggressive towards Lily. She hasn't necessarily been in a situation where she's felt afraid of this man. He's excellent at manipulation and wearing a mask. And he's constantly using that sense of, why would you be concerned about me? I'm such a good guy. I've raised money for the children's hospital. All of those things chip away at the feelings that you have towards another individual that you can start believing you've created in your own head, as opposed to playing out in reality with their actions. It's very easy for that to happen. These kind of manipulators make us reason with unreasonable. We can see the evidence in front of our eyes, but they're so convincing and so compelling in the way that they just kind of reject and rebuke those particular suggestions we've made, that we in the end start questioning ourselves. And remember, this is somebody who has been violent with women all the way through. This is an individual who's got a very short, impatient temper. This is an individual who wants to control and manipulate the world around him. And he can do that either through intimidation or violence, or in this case, through absolute manipulation. Because he clearly doesn't want to be violent towards Helen. He's onto a good thing with her. But he's still got these violent impulses and desires. So he wants to be able to harm another human being, get away with it, but not at a cost to his level of enjoyment in his world, such as being able to go and stay with Helen most of the time. He doesn't want to compromise that. So he's found the perfect victim in Lily. It's as simple as that. As far as he's concerned, he doesn't want anybody to think he can't be trusted to look after her. He wants to ensure that Helen believes him and believes in him, because Helen is a convenient person in his world right now. He gets a lot from her. And of course, Lily is someone who doesn't have the capacity to let the world around her know just how dangerous this individual is. Now, Helen's got her doubts. She really does. She's not been leaving him alone with Lily. She's really concerned about all of this bruising. She's concerned about the fact that these bruises seem to appear after he's been present with her. And she's got to a point now where she's decided that the best scenario that she can play out is to always have Lily with her when he's around. But he's again chipping away at that and saying, I could be available to you. You're a busy person. Let me look after her when you go dancing with the daughters or when you go to uni. And of course, you know, you want to believe that this person is telling the truth. And that's another thing that's going to chip away at that belief system that she started to create, that this man is probably more dangerous than he is admitting to be. Now, she had no idea what a horrific manipulative liar Sadler was. You know, this is someone who is literally violent to the core. And we know that he has a particular connection with vulnerable people, vulnerable targets, all the way from school. And you don't get more vulnerable than being a baby. You don't get more vulnerable than being a non-verbal child. And it turns out that since at least September 2017, this is when he just began looking after Lily, Sadler had been physically abusing her. So all that manipulation around getting Helen out of the way, that's because Lily was his personal punch bag. And I'm putting that in the context that I've put it because it's absolutely 100% correct to state it. She was his punch bag, full stop. This gorgeous, charismatic, sweetheart of a little girl. This tiny, framed, vulnerable child. And he is just using her to satisfy his violent desires. So those unexplained injuries to Lily's ears and arms, they were caused by him literally forcibly gripping her. And he had manipulated Helen and lied to Helen consistently to get access to Lily. Now, bear in mind, there were all those photographs that he'd taken of Lily's injuries. And he'd taken them because he caused them. And he knew that when he was taking those photographs. And on one level, yes, he's manipulating Helen to believe that he is also concerned. But there's another bit of me that just thinks about how certain criminals really like mementos of what they have done. It gives them psychological and emotional gratification. So the knowledge that Lily has been injured and now he's got a catalogue that he can look through of those injuries that he knows no one knows he is causing, that will again give him a level of power. This man likes dominating, bullying, and being powerful over those more vulnerable. So of course, collecting the images is probably something that he finds really exciting, really thrilling, and it anchors him to the horrific crime. In fact, it probably incentivizes him to want to do more. And all the while, Helen is thinking that they're doing this because they both have a common cause, a desire to find out what's going on with Lily. Now, by the November, so it's a really short amount of time, the seriousness of these assaults had escalated hugely. And we get to Sunday, the 19th of November, 2017, and this must be a day that Helen regrets every moment of every minute of every hour of every day. And I think she will do for the rest of her life, because she needs to take her two eldest daughters to dance class. And Sadler, of course, has been working his way into her psyche to assure her that it's all going to be fine, that Lily can be trusted with him. So he says, you just need to leave her with me. I'll also look after your four-year-old little girl and it will all be fine. And she's obviously at that point where she's probably wavering a little bit, and she's thinking to herself, you know, maybe I'm being a little bit hard on him. I've not seen any evidence recently that he's going to be a problem or he's being predatory towards my children. Maybe I do need to give him another chance. So she leaves Lily and her four-year-old sister in his care. And in doing that, she makes the biggest regretful decision of her life. So it gets to around 3 p.m. that afternoon. And at this point, Sadler contacts emergency services. Lily had been watching TV on the sofa. According to him, she'd fallen asleep and then she'd become unresponsive. So he's alleging that he couldn't wake her. Just bear in mind the circumstances around a child just going to sleep on a sofa who's apparently perfectly well and then becoming unresponsive is so rare that we never really hear about it. But this is what he's saying. He can't wake her up. That's why he calls the ambulance. And of course, they're soon on the scene. This is a child who is unresponsive. It's a major deal. The paramedics arrive and he's just like, I have no idea what happened. I've not got a clue. This child was just happily watching television. And then all of a sudden, she's completely unresponsive. Now, again, the level of manipulation there shows superiority and narcissism, because if she thinks that the paramedics are just going to accept that story without any investigation, he is living on planet cuckoo, genuinely. Clearly, this is a child who's unresponsive, potentially seriously unwell. You're going to have some insight into what potentially could have gone on, but no, he's just saying everything's been fine and now she's completely unresponsive. So Lily is then rushed to Birmingham Children's Hospital. She's in an absolutely critical condition. And bear in mind, this is the same hospital that Sadler once raised cash for a charity event for. Now, he actually gets in the ambulance with her. He accompanies her because basically he's seen as the concerned carer at that moment in time. Now, it takes the doctors literally moments to identify pretty immediately that something catastrophic has happened to this child. And they are able very quickly to recognise that a catastrophic brain injury has actually occurred. So at this point, she's taken to the paediatric intensive care unit and the prognosis is described as life-threatening. So they do a CT scan and that indicates subdural bleeding and clear signs of raised intracranial pressure. So that means brain swelling. So at this point, they need to prepare Lily for emergency brain surgery, because when the brain is swelling, it's catastrophic and often results in death. Now, whilst preparing Lily, because obviously they've got to get her ready very quickly for emergency surgery, the doctors actually come across fingertip bruising to her scalp, which is beneath her hair. And that means immediately they know something's gone on here, because it means that at some point considerable pressure had been applied to her head. If you imagine gripping her head, and imagine somebody doing that to you when you're a grown ass man and you have got your hand or hands around a baby's head and you're squeezing it, because that's what the bruises would demonstrate. And that's what he's been doing to her. Also, there were injuries to both her temples. So again, very demonstrative if somebody's doing this, because obviously they'll probably, as an adult, be able to get their hands all the way around. And that's why you'll get the bruising to the temple, for example. It's probably where the thumbs are. Now, despite two operations, and believe me, at the hospital, they were desperate to save this little girl's life. Neurosurgeons worked tirelessly to save her, to reduce the brain swelling, but it was unsuccessful. And Lily died 3 days later on the 22nd of November 2017. Just absolutely heart-wrenching and gut-wrenching to know that this little girl had been left with somebody that Helen believed she was probably being unfair on, and had chosen to override her concerns about him to give him a second chance. And that meant that this little girl doesn't get another chance. And the fact that we're seeing the level of injury, which is just so severe, you cannot even begin to comprehend the type of agony that little girl must have gone through. And it comes down to Helen to have to make a decision, because they have to switch off her life support. She had to make a decision to turn off the life support of a 21-month-old little girl. When the doctors looked at all the injuries that were obviously catastrophic, they said there is no way that these are accidental. So they recorded that the injuries were non-accidental. And at this point, West Midlands Police were notified, and the investigation begins into the circumstances surrounding Lily's death. When they established the full extent of injuries that Lily had suffered, it is just devastating, the only word I can use. She sustained 40 injuries on this tiny little body. 20 of these were actually to her head and neck. And the expert opinion concluded that she'd been vigorously, repeatedly shaken. Now, bear in mind, she was actually only 2 years of age. So we're talking about a very different circumstance to a little baby, a newborn, for example, when shaken baby syndrome occurs and you see this catastrophic impact. And actually, the shaking doesn't have to be that hard. Frustrated shaking is going to cause catastrophic injuries. And babies are very, very fragile. But Lily isn't. She's nearly two. And that means that physiologically, she'll have quite a strong neck. And that means that the injuries that were inflicted on her would have had to have been very substantial. So when we're talking about vigorous repeated shaking, we're meaning violent shaking, because the head needs to go back and forward, back and forward. And she's got some control over it. So that needs to be removed when this kind of event occurs. And he obviously did that, because he's an adult male who is catastrophically attacking this child. And they even believed that her head had potentially struck against a yielding surface. So a yielding surface is something where you strike it and it gives a little. It's not like an impact straight onto a hard surface like wood, shall we say. But if you think about the arm of a sofa, so it's hard, but it's usually got padding on, that's the kind of surface we'd be talking about. And the brutality of that assault, that had caused Lily to suffer a horrific injury. So she had spinal nerve root injury in her neck and lumbar sections. She had 6 broken ribs. She had extensive eye bleeding. She had severe swelling to the brain. And they also found that her chest had been really forcibly compressed, and that her attacker had used both hands. Just put that into context when you think about it. We're talking about this big man, and imagine the size of his hands, and he's pressing down forcibly on her chest. He's pressing down on areas of her body that this little tiny frame can't manage. And essentially causing these horrific injuries. I've had one broken rib. It was awful. It's so painful. This is a little girl, and she's got six broken ribs on top of all the other things I've just said. Fortunately, they were also able to validate that it was when Lily was in Sadler's sole care when the fatal injuries were inflicted. So now there is an absolute obvious suspicion of murder, and he gets arrested on that suspicion. But as I've just described, those injuries that we've just talked about, they're not consistent with a child just being sat on a sofa watching TV and being unresponsive. We're talking about somebody who looks like they've been in a serious car crash, and yet he's just going about his business thinking, if I say nothing and act like I've no idea what's happened, they're not going to be able to pin anything on me because I come from the school of absolutely stupid. But nonetheless, crack on, sweetheart. You're going to be very easy for the police to unravel. It's obvious to the investigators, it's obvious to the doctors that Lily hasn't just fallen asleep and become unresponsive. She'd been brutally assaulted. Now, when the investigators get hold of Sadler's phone, of course, there's that catalogue of images that he and Helen have been collating because Helen's really concerned that something is going on with Lily. But there are photos that Helen doesn't have. So, yeah, on one level, these mystery injuries are being recorded because they're being diligent about what's wrong with her. But Helen has no idea that one of the images is absolutely horrific. It actually shows Lily on the sofa, unconscious, in a decerebrate posture. Now, that is a really abnormal body posture, and it's where the arms and legs are held straight out, the toes are pointed downwards, and the neck and head are arched backwards. And the reason that that's such a distressing photograph to see is that the reason that somebody would be in that posture is it's caused by rigid tightening of muscles, and it's a typical symptom of severe brain damage. And that picture is there, and the investigators find it. And it's even more horrific when they look at the timestamp, because it's done on the day of Lily's death, and it's taken at 1:09 p.m. that afternoon. That is almost 2 hours before Sadler even calls the ambulance. So even though he can see that she's in a terrible situation, the posture itself gives warning that there is something severely problematic going on in the physiology of the child, he does nothing. Now, I'm not saying for 1 minute that Lily's injuries would have actually been survivable. I don't believe they would have. He'd done so much damage to her. But it's the fact that it highlights his callousness. It highlights the indifference that he has to her welfare. He just inflicted this horrifically violent assault on her. He must have known that she was in terrible pain. He must have known that she'd been injured very seriously. And instead of actually getting the help, he takes a photo of her and waits 2 hours. Because all he's concerned about is himself. He's just hoping that some miracle's going to occur and she's going to come round. And he's willing to take that chance and make that choice, even if the consequences for Lily are absolutely catastrophic. In this case, fatal. And I'm not saying she would have survived them. I'm saying that he would never have given her an opportunity to be able to survive them, no matter what, because he was thinking of his own needs. Now, they've put together what they believe played out on the day that she was killed. They think that Lily was either playing in the living room or maybe having a nap in the living room, and then Sadler enters. And when he's alone with this gorgeous little girl, he just subjects her to the most extreme assault that any of us could imagine. So he grabs her face and head with force. It must have been absolutely terrifying for this little girl who doesn't put a foot wrong. And then he'd have pressed with force on her chest using both of his hands. And at this point, she would literally have been unable to breathe. It would have restricted her airflow completely. And then he'd gone on to just viciously shake her repeatedly. And that's what causes the catastrophic brain injury. But that's not enough. They think that after he'd done all of those things, he'd just then thrown her against the arm of the sofa. Just the most unbelievable images to carry in our heads, isn't it? It's like he treated her like a rag doll with absolutely no care, compassion, or concern about the injuries that he was going to inflict on her. And again, this is not somebody who cannot control his temper. We can see he can control his temper. He's just waiting for an opportunity to explosively use it. and she's been the perfect victim. When they do the autopsy, it later establishes that 21-month-old Lily had also suffered prior assaults, which obviously we're all aware of because of all of the concerns that Helen had. But this assault, again, would have been purely at the hands of Sadler. It was about 2 weeks before she died. So during that attack, she suffered 3 fractured vertebrae and a pulmonary hemorrhage. That means bleeding in the lung. And if you think about the level of those injuries, can you imagine the pain that she would have been in? And when the expert medical opinion actually reached their conclusions, they said that the injuries were caused by forced bending forwards of Lily's spine, and that that forced bending forwards would have actually closed her airway. They even said that following that injury, Lily would have found it really difficult to breathe and that she would have been in constant discomfort. That was 2 weeks before she was murdered. Can you believe it? It's really hard to get our heads around those kind of impacts that we see these children suffering, that this man was torturing her. Because again, when you think about bending a child forward to the point that she literally has her breathing constricted and reduced to a point where she hemorrhages, this isn't what somebody acts like in a temper tantrum. Not that it is ever acceptable in any way, shape or form to abuse a child physically. What I am saying is, a parent who snaps and hits a child, that's a completely different temperament, although I disagree with that kind of action and see it as abuse, it's still very different than somebody thinking, how can I really hurt this child? I'll bend them over really, really tightly and restrict their breathing. That's about torture. It's premeditated. It's thinking out, how can I cause real damage quietly? How can I create agonizing impacts on this baby without people necessarily knowing? And he's doing that. When we get to the trial at Birmingham Crown Court, it begins March 2021. And when the expert witnesses testify about all the multiple sites of recent healing and all the injuries that are found on Lily's small body, they say this is all evidence that this abuse had been sustained. This was a consistent theme in those last months of this little girl's life. Now, of course, what does Sadler do? Sadler's just like, no, I don't know what you're on about. Absolutely no idea what's going on here. Just walked in. Lily was unresponsive on the sofa with literally traumatic injuries that killed her. But, you know, literally have no idea how that happened. Just sticks with it. Absolutely believes that if he can just start with this story and keep pressing that this story is true, that in the end, the jury are just going to fall for it. But it's clear, just from the actual injury report itself, that there's nothing supporting his version of events. So he tries then to go, well, I don't know what happened, but maybe, maybe Helen does. So decides that he's going to try and deflect blame of Lily's death onto the person who had brought her into her world, cherished her, encouraged her to thrive, and even being concerned about the injuries to such a degree she'd sought support from the nursery and the medical system. But yeah, she's the problem. And again, the manipulation level, and on top of that, this is a person who is willing to try to incriminate the person that they've been in a relationship with. Because let's be honest, the highlighting there of his narcissism is absolutely clarified in Technicolor. Helen was just a cash cow, a place to stay, someone to hang around convenience wise and give him access to a child that he wants to horrendously abuse. And as soon as she's served her purpose and she can no longer help him, he's just going to use her as an opportunity to blame and to plaster guilt on when it comes down to the death of this child. So we're seeing it play out in real time, the level of narcissism that runs through this man's veins. Now, the jury, they see through it straight away. They're like, we don't really need to listen to him because it doesn't make any sense. To the point where we would like this man removed from the court, placed in stocks and left in the village square for a month and quite hard bricks to be available to. Sorry, that's just my fantasy again, going down a road that isn't legal in the UK. But the jury, obviously, because they're bright people who care deeply about justice and desperately want this little girl's justice legacy to be fulfilled, realise this is all BS, see through all his obvious lies, and find him guilty of murder on the 24th of March 2021. Amen to that. They also find him guilty of assaulting Lily 2 weeks before her death. Now, wow. When it comes to the seriously aggravating facts in this case, they're enormous. So first of all, when you look at aggravating factors, one of the big things is going to be Lily's very young age. She's a really highly vulnerable victim. She couldn't even verbally communicate the abuse that she was suffering at his hands. Also, she was attacked in her own home. That's a sanctuary. It's a place of safety. It's where you should expect to be the most safest. That means that there was a severe breach of trust. And on top of that, in general, there's a severe breach of trust because he was given the opportunity to look after her and failed to protect her. Sadler had been in a position of care and he'd abused that position and abused it with deadly consequences. Now, this breach of trust had further been aggravated by the constant lies that Sadler was telling, because bear in mind, when Helen confronted him, he could have admitted it, but instead he just wanted more access to that little girl. So he continually lied about what he was doing around her to ensure that he could have that access and continue the abuse. And also, he manipulated Helen to believe that he wasn't abusing her so that it could continue. And that aggravating factor continues where the deceit and manipulation is concerned, because it had led to Helen making this tragic and utterly misguided decision to leave Lily in his care. Now, the further aggravating feature was the physical and psychological pain that Lily would have experienced during the attack. So before she actually lost consciousness, and the prolonged suffering that she would have then endured because he waited almost 2 hours to get medical help. And you have to think about those last 2 weeks where she was clearly living in agony and suffering because of the injuries he'd inflicted on her then. And if you think about the fact that that child had been suffering these serious assaults and terrible injuries, the fractured vertebrae, the bleed in the lung, all this combined with the abuse that she'd suffered prior to even that, gripped by her ears, her head. And even though she wasn't able to speak of her abuse, one of the things that really breaks my heart, and I'm sure it breaks all of your hearts, is she couldn't actually verbally say this is happening, but my God, she tried to communicate her fear through her behaviour. She tried to let people know, this man scares me. And it's devastating and blindsiding to know that she didn't have the capacity to display and to inform those around her of just how terrified she was of this man and how she didn't want to be anywhere near him, because she couldn't speak those words. She couldn't say, he's hurt me. The court also took into account another aggravating factor was with all these violent convictions before, because it paints a picture of an individual who's incredibly violent towards women, and he liked the more vulnerable, the better, essentially. Like I said at the very beginning of this guy is somebody who enjoys power and domination. He's clearly a sadist. He loves the idea of having that power, inflicting pain on defenseless victims. The more defenseless, the better. And when you think about all the victims that we know about, at least, Lily is definitely the most vulnerable of all of those. You know, he committed that crime in a domestic setting when he was alone with his victim. This man is a child killer. He's a serial abuser of women. And that's a massively aggravating factor when it comes to sentencing. And the final aggravating factor, which I feel speaks volumes, and also is, I'm just throwing it out there, another reason why maybe the village square with the bricks and the stocks for a month shouldn't be totally thrown out, is the fact that he showed no remorse. This little girl has been brutalized, tortured, and murdered, and he literally doesn't show any remorse. He only thinks of himself, thinks of how he's gonna evade detection, avoid responsibility. That's all he cares about. Now, in mitigation, it appears the judge had been smoking a bit of crack, because apparently there was an acceptance that he hadn't intended to kill Lily, and also that the attack hadn't actually been premeditated. Now, okay, let me stretch a little bit of empathy towards the judge, who may have been, I don't know, on the cognac the night before. But even if I agree that he may only have intended to cause serious harm to Lily and not actually to kill her, Can somebody please send the answer on a postcard to how his actions were not premeditated? Please? Anyone? Anyone? Obviously, there's only me and a cat in the room. I'm not saying I'm going to get an answer. But please, how was it not premeditated? It occurred during a period of sustained and escalating abuse. He lied to Helen so he could be left alone with Lily. Then he viciously assaulted her. The injuries were injuries that involved torture, but it wasn't premeditated. Can you please leave your kid alone? I'm praying, begging, just please leave your kid with me. Everything's going to be fine. And then he kills her. That's not premeditated. I tell you what, I appreciate I'm not qualified to be a judge. And if I was, I think there'd be a lot harsher sentences, because when I see injuries, when I look at premeditation, when I recognise that children are murdered under our noses by individuals who should be there to protect and care for them, I cannot wrap my head around some of the conclusions that are reached. When you think about all those aggravating factors, which are horrendous, it demonstrates a heinous human being, a predatory male who's incredibly narcissistic. We allow him a mitigation that, oh, well, he may not have actually wanted to kill her because he really enjoyed abusing her. He would like that to carry on for a bit longer, please. But the idea that he didn't premeditate it, he literally lied to Helen constantly to try to get access to Lily. Of course it was premeditated. Honestly, they should have to do breathalyzer tests before these sentences are passed. So we get to the 26th of March, 2021. At this point, 32-year-old Sadler is sentenced, yes, to life in prison for Lily's murder, as he should be. But he only got a minimum term of 20 years. I just can't get my head around that. I think he should have had a minimum term of way more, genuinely. 20 years, when you think about the agony that child suffered and endured, when you think about the future that has been stolen from that family, when you think about the reality of this bad start of this child finding a place in a space where she was loved, and this monster ruins her in this way to a point where her injuries are so catastrophic that she's bleeding from both eyes. 20 years? He'll be 51 when he's eligible for parole. 51! It's a whole lifetime ahead of him. He did get a concurrent 3-year sentence for wounding with intent, but I don't care. It's still 20 years. It's mind-blowing. You know, the fact that he gets that concurrent sentence means nothing. That was to do with the assault in the earlier weeks, but it served at the same time, so it's irrelevant. The jury were obviously absolutely invested in this case. And I'll tell you why, because 8 members of that jury that convicted Sadler came back to court to see him sentenced. So they wanted to see him go down. It must have been an absolutely horrific case for them to deal with, and they clearly needed to see him sent down. Because in the UK, that's what happens in a court of law. They literally get sent down. They go down the steps as they're taken to be locked up before being transported to whatever prison they've been sent to. And just having the closure and thinking, yeah, we did this. We sent you down. It's not satisfying. There's no satisfaction when a child has been murdered, but it's that sense of we've done the right thing. I imagine some of them probably wanted to shout at the judge when he said 20 years, but who am I to say that that happened? Just saying, I'm a human being with a soul, and that's how most of us would react. Now, in 2021, you won't be surprised, they had to do a serious case review because Lily had been murdered and there had been systemic horrific failures that had led to that. So the probation service, their failure to share all those details around Sadler's situation, prior convictions, violent behaviour, they said that that contributed to Lily's death. Of course it did. And they said there was a catalogue of missed chances to check and monitor his presence in her life, because if the probation had actually followed their own procedures, no one else's procedures, just the procedures that we've actually set for this service, the ones you meant to follow, just those ones, It said that children's social care would have been alerted and the safeguarding procedures would have been put in place. And that would have made a difference. They said could have made a difference to a tragic outcome, but it would have made a difference. Because Helen was absolutely 100% on the ball when it came to caring for her kids. She was concerned about him. She believed in the end that maybe she'd overreacted, but up until that point, she'd certainly catalogued the injuries. She'd asked for support and help. There is no way she would have been like, oh, it's fine. This man's a huge, violent predator. I will definitely have him around my children. She would have been like, see ya. You know, there is no way he would have had entry and access to her life and kids. Now, Helen, who was obviously Lily's mum, but Lily's guardian by law, she actually told the Review that she blamed herself for Lily's death. She said that she should have been more suspicious of Sadler. She shouldn't have taken him at his word. She shouldn't have let him babysit. That she should have seen the pattern in the bruises. And I feel that that is something that I fully understand she carries. But I also feel that she's being incredibly hard on herself because the person to blame here is Sadler, full stop. And we've all been around mass manipulators, and it's easier said than done when you actually think about acting on those fears, because often we believe that we're overreacting. And he was somebody who was excellent at that manipulation, and she now has to carry that guilt for the rest of her life. Helen also said, with respect during the Review, that she did blame the police for not informing her about Sadler's conviction. She said, if I'd known about that, there was absolutely no way I would have been with him. I'd have distanced myself from him immediately. And it is really sad that she blames herself. She was clearly a loving and a devoted mother. Like I said, there is one person to blame in this. Cowardly bully, a sadistic killer, Sean Sadler. When he was convicted, Lily's grandmother Leslie said this of Lily. Lily was funny. She'd hear music and she was off. She just loved music. She loved dancing. She used to walk around in these big boots, and then if you picked your phone up, she'd run straight over and start pulling faces. She used to love that. And then you showed her what you'd recorded and she loved that. She was a really good kid. Those innocent moments that we kept about the children that we love. It's such a powerful reality for so many of us. You know, we see our children in their most innocent of moments just being totally immersed in life and the moments of experience that make them giggle and the way that they make us giggle and how that reinforces those actions and what her gran says is something I think so many of us can relate to. It's really sad that on average, 3 children in the UK are killed each month by mistreatment or neglect at home. It's a horrendous statistic, that, isn't it? 3 children, 3 young people at the very beginning of their lives, having their lives stolen by the neglect of those people who were entrusted to care for them. It's a constant feeling of frustration that I have to carry, knowing that there are all these people who have direct contact with children, and yet they fail to spot the signs of abuse again and again and again. So we fail to spot them in schools, in nurseries, in GPs. But it's not just in the services that we need to get better at spotting this abuse. As a society, we need to get better at spotting these signs. We need to get better at speaking up for those who can't speak for themselves. We need to be the voices of the Lilies of this world when they can't find their voice because they're not developmentally able to. That's what needs to happen. I've said it before in my videos, I'll say it again. It takes a village to raise a child, and my God, it takes a village to protect them. I always note that one of the things that I feel is really powerfully important when we're talking about children and losing these children is that we have to get better at offending. We have to be willing to push the boundaries when it's uncomfortable and say, this has been seen. I want to push forward and speak to social services because I don't think it's all right. Whether you're a doctor, a nurse, whether you're an individual who works with a child, whether you're a friend of the family, it's about risking offending because it's the right thing to do. It's far better to be wrong and for a child to be fine than to be right and do nothing and for a child to die or for a child to suffer. We can make a difference and it's our duty to do so. This video is 100% for that gorgeous, big-eyed, beautiful little girl who should right now still be dancing around the family that she loved. I'm sure our sympathy and empathy go out to Helen and her family, to her grandma, and I'm sure that all of us are excited at the prospect of that man one day meeting his maker, instantly being deep fried and being kept in a cell in hell where he can burn eternally. Maybe that's just my fantasy, but it's the one that I think you should all share. See you again next time, guys. This is for Lily.